This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Hey Dreamers, I'm Joe Pardo, and today I am talking with Scott Barlow, who is making his dreams come true by helping others figure out what their dreams are and making them happen. Glad to have you on the show, Scott.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Not a problem, sir. I'm glad that we connected because I'm pretty sure it was Doc Kennedy, right?
Yeah, Doc connected us up. He's pretty good at that.
Yeah, he's a good friend of the show, has been on, and I've been on his show twice, and he's just a great guy. Love hanging out with him.
You've been on the Dream Warriors twice? He has a yes. couple of podcasts now, but...
Yes, yeah, Very Dream cool. Warriors twice. I know he's working on his film, Filmmaker's Focus.
Yeah.
It's not out, or it might be out now, I'm not quite sure, but I'll probably have him on again in the not-too-distant future to talk about the endeavor that he endured with that.
Yeah, he's gone through quite a bit in the last year. A lot of transformation. But yeah, thanks, Doc. Thanks for having me on.
So, Scott, why don't you get started by giving some background about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So I won't give you the lifetime narrative or anything, but you know, I really feel like my story started with college because I was very much one of those people that really had no idea what it was that I wanted to do. You know, you've met all kinds of people like this, Joe, I'm guessing, where, you know, you might have changed majors, let's say 2, 3, 4, 7, 8, 9 times, whatever. I was on the higher side. And, you know, from there, I actually made all those major changes, really just had no idea what it was that that I wanted. And ended up coming out of college and accepting a job that I just sort of fell into, I guess you could say. You know, at that point in time, I really didn't know how to do anything differently. So that job was available. People were telling me that, hey, this is you know, great opportunity. You've heard that before. This is a great opportunity. And took it and absolutely despised it, you know, to the point where I was having, I don't know, like heart palpitations or something on the way into work on Monday morning and staying up late on Sunday night. And you know, somehow I'd convinced myself that if I, you know, didn't go to bed, then Monday morning wouldn't come. Right. So that was very much my first year out of college.
Scott,
very exciting.
Were you feeling any guilt because of that? Like, because people were telling you, oh, this is an amazing opportunity. You know, you should be so thankful to be able to have this job. And you're like, I hate this job.
Okay, so to be 100% honest, I mean, I'm going to do anything else. But it took me almost a year to convince myself that this wasn't what I wanted. So I don't know if it was guilt or I don't know if it was a whole bunch of other emotions at the same time, but it really seriously took me 10, 12 months to be able to decide, no, this actually is terrible. Before, I was trying to convince myself that I really should enjoy this and it was that great opportunity. So yeah, it was probably a little bit of guilt and it was a whole bunch of other stuff mixed in there too. It was also well, what else would I do? I mean, this pays well. This is what I, you know, kind of have learned to do. And the reality was I was really bad at the job too. So what ended up happening out of that is I sort of have this thing where once I have made a decision of any kind, I've got to go and tell people, or I've got to go and get it off my chest or whatever you want to call that. Right. So I went and talked to my boss and I'm like, hey, I think I've made the wrong decision. I'm not sure if this job is good for me. Just, I don't know, being straight up honest. And 3 weeks later, he fired me.
Wow.
So, wow. Yeah.
Honesty wasn't the best policy, apparently.
Honesty was, well, actually, I truly believe it was in that case. I don't know if I would have had the exact same conversation in the exact same way, but I still would have been honest with him. It worked out really, really well because what happened is after that, after about 2 days of feeling sorry for myself and, yeah, sort of, I don't know, convincing myself that now I can do this. I really, at that point in time, swore that I would never again do work that I didn't like, didn't enjoy, and didn't have the potential to be great at. So that was kind of the turning point where I started figuring out, okay, how does this whole careers thing work? How does it work to make career changes, especially drastic ones? And, you know, what do I need to do to actually, you know, start doing work and pursue a career that I really actually enjoy? So that was it. That's what kind of set me on the journey. And this has been about, I don't know, 10 plus years ago at this point. And since then, never looked back. So I'm really, really glad it happened. But yeah, it was totally painful in the moment.
So then what were your first steps once you figured out, like, okay, I'm not going to do what I don't want to do anymore? And you probably had people looking at you like, well, what are you going to do? And you're like, I don't really know yet.
So first thing, I don't know, I wasn't really comfortable with saying I was fired at the time. So I'm like, well, I got laid off and they're not going to replace the position. And, you know, that was all true and everything like that. But, you know, that's what was going through my mind initially. And then I started trying to take the stuff that I knew and apply it into this whole job search thing. So one of the things that I did is I taught sales, and that's actually a piece of the job that I did enjoy. You know, I taught sales to people. And so I literally charted out what I imagine to be a sales cycle. You know, I need to contact this many companies, which is going to turn into this many interview opportunities, which is going to turn into this many job offers, and so on. So I ended up using that type of approach and just started trying to connect with the people that could hire me. Those in the sales world, it's going to be called, you know, the decision makers. I had some success with that. I started contacting those people and saying, hey, you know, I really am looking for a role in HR, human resources. Here's the experience that I have. You know, would you be interested in talking to me for a few minutes? And that started working. It didn't at first because I didn't know what the heck I was doing, but, you know, over about a period of 3-4 weeks, it started working. And I had a lot of pressure on because my wife and I had a mortgage. We didn't have a ton of savings at the time. We had all of this this credit card debt, way more than we should have. And, you know, there was a lot of pressure. I basically had about 2 months to make a transition. We didn't have any other runway beyond that and didn't really know what we were going to do. So it started working, and I started talking to these other companies. I ended up talking to Nike, ended up talking to Target, Dish Network, Home Depot, all of these other organizations that I was really interested in working with. And those are who I was targeting. I wasn't just targeting any company that was out there in the world at the time. You know, I was saying like, hey, how am I going to get to what I want if I am randomly just applying for any job that's out there, right? So that was my approach. And it started working, and eventually accepted, got a couple of job offers actually, and then eventually started doing some HR management for Target. But then that led to a whole bunch of opportunities down the road, and people started hearing about my career changes. So the funny thing was, they would hear about my career change stories. They would ask things like, hey, you know, how'd you do that? And, you know, I'd tell them a little bit, and they're like, well, I've got this friend, and he's an accountant right now, and he'd love to be doing this other thing. Would you go have coffee with him? And that's what kind of kickstarted what I do now in HTYC. This has been about 5 or 6 years ago. I'd go have coffee with these people because, hey, I love coffee and, you know, free food and whatever else. And I'd give them career advice, and I'd just talk to them. And eventually they started sending me thank yous, and people started sending me gift cards and then offering to pay. And it's like, whoa, hey, there might actually be something to this. So that's kind of how it came full circle for me.
You know, it's funny how what most people would see as failure turned into opportunity to learn a bunch of ways to get your foot in the door with a bunch of different companies.
Yeah.
Even if it was things that you really didn't want to be doing in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's great that worked out for you. And it's funny how it's stuff like that just sort of steamrolls itself when, you know, one person talks to another person and you help one person and they tell someone else. And before you know it, you get along to those people that are like, yeah, how much do you charge?
It's like, really, like, I charge. Charge like, for this?
What
do you mean?
Being
like,
friendly.
Coffee's good. Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of amazing when you think about it in that way, actually. Which is, I don't know, I mean, you've heard the advice all the time from person after person. You just need to start. You just need to get in there and experience something and blah, 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 whatever. But I think that that is very true to a high degree because, you know, as you start and as you start to do things that you enjoy, and I mean, I was doing that for free. Like, somebody would go play golf, right? I was doing that as a hobby at one point. Like, I was turning down golf opportunities to go and meet with people for coffee and whatever else. I was like, at the time, I never would have seen that as a business opportunity, but it was something that I truly enjoyed and found myself to be kind of good at.
You know, it's, well, at that point, it's not about the money that they'd be paying you, right? It's about the time that you're not playing golf.
Yeah.
You know, and the money that they need to pay to take you away from that. Now, at the time, it was just paying for coffee or like a scone or Danish or whatever. But
yeah,
as it grows and you get better and hone that skill that you didn't even realize that was a skill that people would pay for. So, I'm glad it worked out for you. And I'm glad that you took that step because there's a lot of people that wouldn't even take that step of saying, okay, I'm going to start to transition from doing this for free for coffee to, all right, I'm going to start charging people for this type of, information and help.
Well, in all fairness, so I guess give you a little bit other background and help you understand how it happened, because it wasn't as smooth as a transition as it is on a 30-second looking back story. It really took a while for both me and my wife, Alyssa, to figure out what it was that we wanted. Like, it really truly did. And it honestly, I thought by now I would be a VP, HR, someplace, some company, right? That's really what I thought that I would be doing. That's really what I thought I wanted for a long period of time too. And Alyssa and I were very much ready to move to Omaha, Nebraska, which, you know, the company at the time, that's where their headquarters were. That's where a number of opportunities were and everything like that. And as we talked about moving to Omaha more and more, and as that got closer and closer and some of those opportunities became available, we realized that we were just doing it because it was one of those good opportunities that, you know, we mentioned earlier. And it's like, well, if this is, you know, if we're not doing it because we both really want to, and like, we could hear it in each other's voices, you know, as we talked about it, or like, yeah, moving to Omaha. And it's like, hold on, what on earth are we doing? And we found ourselves to that degree, even turning down opportunities that were really, really good because we were going to move to Omaha. Like, we found that we were sometimes not doing stuff with friends because it's like, well, hey, we're going to be moving to Omaha in a few months or whatever. And it's like, this is a terrible way to live life. I mean, on the outside, it looked okay, but it really wasn't what we wanted, and we weren't actively pursuing what we wanted. And I don't think we knew the answers to that question entirely at the time. So we sort of set out on this year-long process to figure out what we actually wanted. And, you know, part of it, we kicked it off with, you ever heard of a guy named John Acuff?
Yeah, I do. I know of John Acuff.
Okay, so went to his quitter conference. This has been a number of years ago, but went to his quitter conference, and that was kind of what kicked it off in that regard. Started thinking about, hey, what type of, you know, we've been talking about starting a business again. This is my second business for years. Why are we not just doing that now? If that's the goal, why do we keep, you know, why do we need to move to Omaha in order to start a business? Like, why can't we stay where we like, you know, in Moses Lake, Washington, which not everybody likes that, but we love it here. And so it very much became about this, how do we figure out what it is that we really want, and how do we cultivate a life around that versus just what the next greatest opportunity was? And as I looked at that, I started realizing that what I should be doing for a business is stuff that I'm doing already and stuff that I enjoy and stuff that I want to surround myself and my time with. And only then did it become apparent that I'm already doing all this stuff, helping people with their careers and clarifying what it is that they want. So that's, I wish I could say it was totally, you know, totally that smooth of a transition, but it really wasn't. There was about a year or 2 years in between where I had to go through some of those realizations too.
So how did the rest of your family take it when you were like, hey, I'm going to start this business and not move to Omaha and we're just going to figure it out as we go along?
Well, my family's used to my nutty ideas. So they're just like, uh-huh, whatever, Scott, go to town. So I don't know. They'd seen me move all over the place. They'd seen me get promotions, get raises, accept different opportunities, all kinds of junk like that. And it seemed like every 3 months I was coming to them with a new thing. So I think that they were used to it. When I told other people, though, that didn't necessarily have that perspective, that I get a lot of nodding, smiling. Yeah. I'm fairly, I don't know. I guess I'm a fairly persuasive guy in some cases. So there's not a lot of people who are going to tell me that's stupid just by nature of my personality and the way that I communicate. But, you know, I've worked in HR for years and worked around people for years and years and years. And as I read body language, I can see a lot of the, that's nice, but yeah, that really is stupid.
Well, you know, it gave you plenty of practice on how to deal with it. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
and how to help other people deal with it along the way. So, experience comes in all kinds of forms.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So I want to ask you a question, though.
Okay, go ahead.
Is it like kosher to interview the? I know it's probably not, but
no. It's this. This is more of a conversation. I mean, I have questions here, but you know, I like to have conversation with my guests rather than just hardlining the questions.
I'm really curious. This is as we were, you know, getting logged on this morning. I realized that I didn't know how you ended up starting this podcast, because I love the content and I love the idea of it. And, you know, the other day I spent a couple of minutes on the website just floating through, because I usually do a little bit of research before I come on as a guest for anything. But I didn't see any place how your idea started or why you started the podcast maybe is more.
Well, I think. Or at least last time I checked, maybe it's changed and I didn't even realize I did it. On the about site for the podcast, it does talk about, let's see, blah, 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 blah. The second paragraph, let's see. On May 2nd, while flying to Orlando, Florida, my good friend Martin helped inspire me to start a podcast. So, you know what, that isn't really the whole story, obviously, because it's only one paragraph.
That was it, that's all. Done.
What it was at the time I had this this DJ mix album, my first one, come out, and I was looking for podcasts, Disney related podcasts, to be on, because it's an album of Disney music mashed up with hip hop instrumentals to retell the story of Up, of Pixar's Up.
That sounds awesome, by the way. I don't think I've heard of anything like that before, but
probably not. They're actually got them printed up on CDs. Are you able to see my camera?
Yeah, yeah.
So
very cool.
So there's like the chairs from the movie, yeah. And if you open it up, there's like lots of Disney references with the track listing and everything like that. In fact, the CDs are the buttons from the movie. So like the Ellie badge is one of the CDs.
Nice.
And the other one's the Assist in the Elderly badge, which Russell's going after in the beginning of the movie and gets it at the end. But you never actually see it, so we just made up our own. So anyway, he, you know, I was asking what podcasts, Disney ones, do you listen to? Because he listens to a lot of podcasts, and he's like, oh, I listened to this and this, and he gave me a couple that I hadn't found, because I had sent emails to like 120 different podcasts and blogs to get reviews and interviews.
Yeah.
He, you know, that's when he was like, oh, there's, you know, you should really listen to Entrepreneur on Fire. It's really great, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, so it's this guy that's interviewing people. Like, that's the whole podcast? He's like, yeah, that's the whole thing. And I'm like, wow, I never really thought about, like, a podcast could just be this idea of not just a roundtable discussion or topic-based, but where it's just interview-based. And I was like, that's really interesting. I was like, you know what? I was like, I bet I could do that. And I was like, I have a pretty, you know, I was like, I know a lot of the people that are entrepreneurs, that are business owners and stuff like that.
Yeah.
From my background, but I was like, I know a lot more people that live their dreams. And then, and this was on a plane. So as soon, like I already had, at that point I was like writing down names. And then as soon as we landed, I started Googling to see if there was any podcasts like it. Actually, it's probably before we even really landed, I was Googling it. And then as soon as we landed, I looked up dreamerspodcast.com. I got that. I got the Twitter handle and I got the Facebook page all before we got to the rental car.
Wow. And way I started to take some action, people. Sir.
Dude, I when I want to go, I just go. And
yeah, I can tell.
It's a shame because I kind of missed out on the weekend because we were going for a race down in Disney.
Yeah.
And I kind of missed out on some of the interaction. But I did talk to a lot of people while I was down there and got a lot of names and made a ton of friends because of my friends referring me to other people that they would have no reason to refer me to otherwise unless I just happened to meet them, you know, in the course of being around people. But yeah. It just kind of took off, and within 2 weeks I had the first show up, and like I already knew how to edit audio. I'm an IT person, so I know website design. I've been doing that since like 96 and
yeah,
like all that stuff. But there was a couple little things I needed help with. My good friend Al Kessel, who does the opening and closing for the show, he pointed me in the right direction on a few things, and I joined up on podcast community and just got it going. And it was at a time where I'm very similar to you, Scott, where nobody ever asked me what I wanted to do. It just kind of was assumed that I was going to be in the family business, and I kind of had reserved myself to this idea. And I actually was to the point where it took me about you said it took about 12 months to work up the nerve to want to quit. It took me about 3 years. 3 years to tell my dad that I wanted to do something else and that I was going to go back to school because I never finished college. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, it's tough. And it was right at a time. Let's see. It was in May. So it was about a month and a half after I had just quit / got fired / brought back on to still do the IT work that I started the show. And it's been an amazing ride ever since.
Very cool. I'm always fascinated by people's beginning stories because truly they're not typically beginning stories, even though it sounds like it at the outset. But that's really interesting. So you, it seems like you're a Disney fan.
Yeah,
I'm gathering.
Yeah, I mean, just, you see the Mickey head behind me.
Yeah, I know. So you went down for a race. Did I catch that? Like a
yeah. Here, let me. I mean, I know the people at home can't see it, but let me switch my camera to this camera and you can see all my medals are right up here.
Nice. So half marathon, marathons.
I've done one marathon to date, several half marathons. I got my first non-Disney medal just the other day doing the Broad Street runs, the shirt I'm wearing.
Nice.
In Philly. So
okay, so the Disney race. Here's why I'm asking. I'm going some ways with this. My wife, Alyssa, has really badly wanted to do one of the Disney runs. So
understandable.
Question number one is, do they do them in all of the Disney parks? And question number two is, which one would you say is the best one to go to if they do?
So I haven't done one out in Disneyland yet. I will be doing that in September, actually. So I'll be getting my quote-unquote coast-to-coast when you do a half marathon on the East Coast and a half marathon on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And when it comes to Disney World, there's several different ones you can do. I would it's a tough call. I think Wine and Dine's probably the best, especially if you enjoy like the Wine and Dine stuff where they bring in all this extra food, and after the run, which is a half marathon, you get to go into a party and it's Christmas time, so there's Christmas, you know, lights and Christmas decorations out everywhere. And you get to run from Epcot to Animal Kingdom and back.
Really?
And you go do you go through Hollywood Studios? I imagine you'd have to go through Hollywood Studios. I think you do go through Hollywood Studios and then come out. So you get to run through like three parks. I'm probably butchering this because I forget.
I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, thanks. I belong to a pretty awesome group, the Mickey Milers. They have their own podcast. Michelle and Mike have both been on the show before, and you know, and I'm not doing it any justice here. So. yeah.
Okay, so the wine and dine. So that's
probably
that's
the best one overall. Unless you want to do a full marathon, then it's Marathon Weekend. That's when they do the full
Marathon Weekend.
Cool. But honestly, a full, you really have to train a lot. Though in my case, I don't train at all. I just do it.
I have it on my list, and I have not picked out a full marathon. So I'm definitely doing a full marathon, and I just need to pick one out, commit to it, so that I can begin training for it. Done a number of halves, mostly West Coast, but yeah, really enjoy that type of stuff.
The full is fun. I mean, you get to run through every single park and Wide World Sports, where the Atlanta Braves play in spring training, and you know it's pretty cool. I mean, it was my first time, and I did it. I don't know. It took like 7 hours to do it, but again, I didn't do any training for it. You know, I think that it's worth doing at least once. Though I know that there's some people, runners out there, that think that Disney's really boring because there can be long stretches of road where you're just on the highway and there's like nothing to look at.
Yeah.
But at the same time I really enjoy the ones where you get to run up to the Magic Kingdom and you get to, you know, run through the gates and get run up to the castle and all that. Actually, hold on 1 second.
So I'm like writing this stuff down because I'm going to go tell Alyssa.
Let's see. All right. So the course map, because am I wrong in thinking that you go? Oh, that's right. This says you start at Wide World Sports and then go up and go through Hollywood Studios. Yeah, I totally butchered it, but.
Everything I said, none of that's right.
Yeah, none of that. Don't listen to Joe. I only got medals on the wall.
I just show up and run, you know.
Pretty much. It's that's how I roll. But for your wife, I would say you know, does she run at all?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then, you know, maybe sign up for the full though. You just missed next year's full, but you might be able to find a bib online. You know, there's always somebody looking to sell one.
She loves the halves, has no desire to do the full. So when I do my full, I'm going to be doing that alone.
So Marathon Weekend's perfect. You get the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Saturday's the half and Sunday's the full.
Perfect. Marathon Weekend. Got it down. So, okay. So since you're a Disney fan, I got to ask you if you knew this. This is like way off topic, but I got the opportunity to listen to Ed Catmull speak the other day, the guy who's in charge of Pixar at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty amazing guy. Did you know that at one point Toy Story 2, like a mostly finished movie, got lost? Like one of the people on their team completely deleted it on accident and then their backups weren't working?
No, I never heard that.
Three quarters of the way finished, and it just got deleted. he completely, you know, made a bad mistake, whatever. It deleted the entire thing. And then that's when they found out what they thought their backups were working. Yeah, they weren't. Yeah, Toy Story 2 could have been completely different. They ended up finding it because somebody had taken a few days holiday, and she had taken a copy, at least a partial copy of the movie, home on her laptop.
Wow. So, I'm surprised they let her do that.
I mean
it's a good thing they did, but
yeah, it's a good thing she did.
Wow.
So fun Disney fact for the day. Fun Pixar fact for the
Let's
day.
Let's see. When did Toy Story 2 come out? 1999. Wow. Finished. So yeah, so that was like really, that's probably backed up to tapes and stuff like that at that point.
Oh yeah.
So I can't imagine that nobody was doing any kind of what's it called, like disaster recovery drills. Like, hey, we gotta like make sure this stuff works in case something actually goes wrong.
They thought they were, but turns out nobody was ever actually double checking it.
Oh man, yeah. man. Lesson learned.
Yeah. Anyhow.
Anyhow, what's been the biggest roadblock you've had to overcome, Scott?
Ooh, let's see. Biggest roadblock. There's been a ton of them, but I'd say the one that stands out in my mind has been making the decision to do things a harder way, I guess you could say. So happened to your career, my business that helps people make these career transitions and figure out what they want and add clarity to their lives. And I decided to start it on the side. And that has been, it's probably been one of the hardest things that I've done. Cause I've run another business before. I had this business in college where, you know, I painted houses. We did different types of contracting, did house painting, a little bit of small light construction, some miscellaneous remodel type stuff. And, you know, I had 5 crews at that point and did it seasonally and like went and, I don't know, snowboarded during the winter and then did that during the summer and, you know, made $40,000 a year, which I thought was pretty good for a college student. But it's a lot harder to do something else on the side, do it really well, do it with 3 children and do it in a way that doesn't sacrifice, you know, values, integrity, all the other stuff that I wanted to do. So I would say making the decision to do that on the side and in that particular way and still have commitment to my family. So some of the things that I've done in order to be able to do that is I started getting up a lot earlier. So I get up at 3:55 a.m. every morning now. And that's early.
What time are you going to bed?
Usually about 9:30, sometimes 10 o'clock, but no later than 10 most nights. Occasionally, I mean, there's been plenty of times like where we've done a launch or we've, you know, had some deadlines and I say we because we've got 4 people on the team part-time. We're all part-time in the business at this point. We all have other jobs, but we're all working on different aspects of it. And, you know, there's been plenty of times where I've had to go to bed at like midnight or later and then turn around and get up at 3:55 to be able to get the stuff done the next day or have a podcast interview like this or whatever else. Should probably mention that, hey, it's a Tuesday morning and we started this at 5 a.m. my time. So what started out is a necessity, just making the decision that this is what I wanted to do and started trying to figure out, okay, if this is truly what I want to do, then how am I going to make it happen? And realized early on that I don't have the time to make it happen. Well, where am I going to get the time from? Because time's just an excuse, right? Okay, well, if I'm really into this and this is really what I want, then I need to figure out how to prioritize the time. So that's how I did it. So I started getting up at 6:15. Then it was 6 a.m. Then it was, you know, 5:30. Then it was 5. And then now it's 3:55 a.m. pretty much every single day.
Do you include a workout in that regimen?
I don't. My kids, I've got 3 little kids, ages 4 to 8, and they like to work out with me. So like I use them as weights and stuff like that. So I do a lot of that when they're around. They have a ton of fun. I have a ton of fun, and I don't know. It's way. It's a workout. They're heavy.
Scott, what was your childhood dream growing up?
I was going to be an architect. Totally going to be an architect. I love to draw. I consider myself to be pretty creative, but not necessarily in always the traditional sense. Not necessarily. I mean, I do some painting and some drawing and. Yeah, I play guitar and taught myself bass and stuff like that, but that's not where I spend most of my time. So I consider myself to be creative, and I sort of have that need to create. Now I'm getting to do that through creating videos for our courses. I'm getting to do that by, you know, interacting with other people that are helping through that process and creating the vision for what the company looks like. And it's a whole different type of creation, but that's where that architect piece actually came from. It's like, oh, okay, I can, you know, I can like create buildings and stuff like that. So that's what I wanted to do when I grew up. That was the dream at the time. And it's still got some aspects of it, but it's a long way from architect.
You know, it's funny how most of the time, what we wanted to do as a kid, it was only a portion of it that made us want to be that, and how we parlayed that into what we do now. You know, we amplified that one part because we've separated, like, hey, maybe I'm not really great at math, or you know, drawing doesn't end up being my strong suit, but it was the idea of like building something,
yeah,
you know, with the architect, yeah. And that's what you parlayed it into to what you do now. Going forward, what do your dreams look like?
I have used have you ever heard of visioning? I guess maybe we'll start there. You ever heard of the process called visioning?
Like a vision quest?
Kind of. Visioning is really looking into the future. Not like in a crystal ball sort of way, not like that type of thing. Like, ooh, I see your future, and not that type of thing. But instead, really looking into the future 5, 10 years, 20 years down the road and saying, hey, here's exactly what I want my life, not necessarily just in my business or anything else along those lines, but my life to look like, smell like, taste like, you know, what it feels like, everything else, and getting very, very granular in some cases about what that is. And this is a process that I didn't realize if you would ask me like 4 or 5 years ago, but this is a process a number of millionaires and what I would consider successful people. And by success, I'm defining that as they are achieving what they want and what they feel like their life should look like. That's how I'm kind of defining success. And, you know, many of these people that I've met use a visioning type process or similar. And, you know, at some point in their lives, they have spent time and charted out what it is that they felt they want. And then not so miraculously, years later, they find that they have been able to accomplish much of that. So when I say granular, I'm talking about, you know, if it's 10 years in the future, here's what my life looks like. Here's what my business looks like. Here's the type of stuff that I'm eating. Here's when I'm getting up. Here is, you know, for me, I've got very specific goals on there, or very specific visions of who are the people that I'm helping, how I'm helping them, what our revenue goals even are, or what our revenue achieved actually, I should say, is that year, where we're poised for growth. And I actually keep this on my wall, just to the right. I'm looking at it right now, you know, just to the right of my computer. It's got everything on there from, you know, how I'm perceived in the by other people, and how I want to be as a person. So I want to be very mindful of the present. I want to be confident and relaxed. I want to be unapologetically me. I want to make other people feel like they're the only one in the room. And so it's that on one side, all the way to the other side of, I want to be in a position where we have just had $5 million of revenue coming in. By the way, that makes me totally nervous to say that on somebody's podcast. My face is probably turning red. Yeah. But I think that's the type of vulnerability you have to experience when you're going through a process like that. So, I mean, there's different variations of this type of process. You know, vision boards have become very, very popular in some circles, right? But anything that will allow you to spend the time really defining what it is that you actually want, that is unrestricted and unqualified and unparalleled, and it's coming from you versus somebody else's version of what you should be doing, then that's going to be very, very helpful. And once you can actually clarify some of that, then you can start figuring out, well, what is it that I need to do to be able to get there? It's kind of like if you hopped in the car and you were going to take a road trip, and you know that you're going to go to Oklahoma. I don't know why somebody would go to Oklahoma, but if you're going to go to Oklahoma, then you can chart out, you can pull up Google Maps and you can see the best way to get there, right? And you can start figuring that out. Versus if you hop in the car and you're like, I'm going on a road trip. Well, where are you going? I don't know, someplace cool. Then you may or may not end up there. Who knows? Probably not likely. You might go over to Montana and you'll be like, well, this isn't all that cool. I mean, I'm not that excited about the mountains. Maybe I want to go surfing. So I go on down to California and I'm down on Long Beach and I go surfing on Long Beach. I'm like, yeah, this is okay, but maybe I'll jump over here and go to this other thing. And then I keep finding things that I really, really don't want. And then I try to move on to the next thing. And that's what most people do with their careers and with their lives. They're on a perpetual road trip where they don't know even remotely what the end destination is. And it's not necessarily you have to figure out exactly specifically, I'm going to Oklahoma. But you do have to figure out, hey, I want to go to a place that allows me to be by the ocean, that allows me to walk every once in a while, that allows me to be around other people, whatever it happens to be for that person. And maybe I'm taking this analogy a little bit far. You know, that's the type of clarity that visioning can give you. And that's just one part of a process that we use and I guess we've created. Jamie Tardy, do you know Jamie Tardy?
Yeah, of course.
She turned me on to part of this too. I'd used visioning in the past a little bit, but then she got me, I participated with her in this almost business accelerator type group that she was doing at the time. You know, this is one of the things that was part of the group. So this is me bringing it back into focus. And it's like, wow, I forgot how powerful this can be. But aside from that, I was getting so many different emails when we started the podcast again and again and again. And people were asking the same thing over and over again. They're like, all the stuff that you're talking about for career changes is really, really nice and all, but I don't even know how to figure out what it is that I want. Like, I don't even know how to figure that out, right? So we kept hearing the same thing over and over and over again, and probably like 20 or 40 emails in, it's like, oh, people need a process to figure out what it is that they want. So we actually created, you know, that type of process for them. And there's a number of different steps in it to be able to move them from, hey, I'm overwhelmed and I don't know exactly what I want, I just know that this isn't it, to the other side of, wow, here's exactly what I want, and now I can start figuring out how to make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's a scary thing to, again, like in your case and in my case, you know, it's like, well, I know that this is not what I want, but I'm scared to let go because I don't have a plan or really a thought of what's next.
Yeah. So mentioned that it is scary. It is totally scary. Ed Catmull and participated in LeaderCast. I don't know if you've heard of it, but you know, it's an event that happens every single year. And this year it had Seth Godin and Ed, and they had a whole bunch of other speakers. And one of the things that I heard very, very clearly is exactly that theme of, even though it's scary, to be able to get where you want to go, whatever that is, you have to be able to let go of the how it's going to happen and just focus on the what initially and then move forward. And that really has to be the vision, because you're not, if you're always focused on the how it's going to happen, you're never going to be able to get where it is you want to go, at least not in an unqualified, unfiltered type way.
No, I'd agree with that. I totally agree with that. I think, I think that if you know, you have to be willing to take those first steps, or else you're just always going to be sitting on the sideline wondering what if and listening to Entrepreneur on Fire and they're like, oh man, all these people are doing these awesome
Jeez,
things.
Jeez, that'd be cool. Here.
Or Dreamers Podcast and all these people are doing all these cool things. And,
yeah.
But you just have to find the first steps. And sometimes, as I've said, it's his first step could just be a Google search, because you don't have to know everything. You just have to know how to Google it. And unfortunately, in a lot of cases, people are unwilling to take that step to just do a Google search. I mean, literally less than a minute, you could start to have answers, some clarity, and start to see, is it, you know, just because this is, what I want to do. You know, I'll share a quick story like that.
Yeah.
One of the things that I wanted to do when I was getting ready to leave, and I was already, I went back to school, and I was like, you know, maybe I want to get involved in the sports world. You know, it seems exciting, sports management, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, I know I don't have a degree, I don't have a sports background, but you know what, let's just go for it. Let's see what happens, right? So I went, I got a resume written up, because I had never done a resume. So I actually went to somebody who did it for me for like $120.
Yeah.
And of course, the biggest problem with my resume was there's only one company on it. I've gone up the ranks, but only one company had my name on it, my last name on it. So I actually went to, I found out about some websites. I applied to some different sports jobs, and I found that there was a quote unquote job fair, or a meet and greet, basically.
Sure.
At my local stadium over in Philly. So I went there, didn't know anybody. And I learned very quickly that these meetings are really, while I learned quite a bit, they were really boring because I was standing in line like the whole time to meet two people. and there was like 8 or 10 people there. So this whole networking thing wasn't a whole heck of a lot of networking to begin with. Though I did talk to some of the people around me, and I got to make a few friends and exchange a few, cards and all. But what I got out of that was I connected with this guy, and he's been on my show, Ryan Creelin, who is actually the ECHL's vice president of operations.
Uh-huh.
And he's a little bit older than me, but what I got out of it was we connected, and then we actually had seats to go to the 76ers game. So I happened to walk around, I guess, the long way to the seats, and he walked around the short way to the seats, or maybe vice versa. And it must have been that way because we met up at the same gate at the same time to walk in, and we started talking again, and we sat down next to each other because it was empty because it's the Sixers game. and the Lakers weren't there or the Heat weren't there at the time. So we started talking, and we quickly became friends, and we've gone out to dinner and met each other's wives, and it's a great friendship. But the cool thing is while success didn't end up looking like me working at one of the local stadiums, or any stadiums at all, what it did turn out to be was I got to learn that I didn't want to work in the sports world, because he showed me all the reasons that it's a very, very difficult and not going to give me the lifestyle that I wanted. And that's why a lot of times on the show I talk about lifestyle, and sometimes people are like, oh, well, I want that business, or it must be nice. And that's actually one of my hated... Do you have a bunch of hated phrases,
nice.
Scott? Yeah, I know. Yeah, it really must be nice.
I literally have a Google, actually several Google Docs with either what I consider to be stupid phrases, like stupid career phrases or stupid other phrases. So yeah, I'm right there with you.
So
I'm adding to it daily, by the way.
Admittedly, that was something that my mom used to say growing up, and I hated it. And I was like 10 years old, and I already hated that saying. So, but the point is you have to figure out what success looks like, and you have to figure out what kind of lifestyle you want. Just because, working at Citizens Bank Park or one of the other stadiums over there, Lincoln Financial Field, would have been awesome. Like, hey, this is my office, this is what I get to come into every day. But ultimately, the lifestyle that it would have provided is not something I would have wanted. And that's, so success was, hey, I made a friend. He gave me the lowdown of like, hey, this is what it is, what it is and what it's not. And while some of it does sound fun, a lot of bootstrapping, especially in the minor league of hockey, not really something, where it's like, hey, my grandmother's dying. Well, we have an away game, so she better die when you're here and not during the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I've
left two jobs actually for that type of reason, lifestyle reason. So completely understand where you're at. I'm really curious, like, what kind of led you through that process? Because that's a lot of what we do as a company is kind of lead people through that process of sort of discovering, not sort of, it is discovering what it is that they actually want. And then getting on a path to get there. But you made this friend, which sounds like helped a ton, right?
It did.
Then you had some of that exposure. So what else helped along that way and kind of pushed you towards the direction that you're on now and made you have some of those realizations about lifestyle or whatever else you found along the way?
Well, I knew, you know, a big chunk of that was I knew what I didn't want because I already lived that. Like with growing up in a family business, while it is a tens of multi-million dollar business, it doesn't. I know what it's like to have to work all day, come back like 4 hours later because it's snowing, plow all night, and then continue to work through the next day. Mm-hmm. And I also know what it's like to not be able to take off time or, you know, God forbid you take one extra day off because there was a hurricane coming. And you were in Florida at the time, and the people you were with chose to drive instead of fly, and you got back one day later than you were supposed to. You know what I mean? Like, this is like life happens, and that's something. It's like, okay, it's not an every day, all day type of thing, but I understand that business needs to go on. But I also understand that in 2014, 2015, 2012, 20, anything in the 20s, you know, past like 2005, 2006, uh-huh. I could do most of my job from anywhere, you know, with a laptop and a cell phone.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, hey, I get it. Like, people want you to be somewhere all the time, but you don't necessarily need to be somewhere all the time. Just because you look like you're not working doesn't mean that you're not working. It just means that somebody else's definition or standard of what work is a shame because that's not necessarily how things work in this day and age. So there was a lot of factors, like knowing what it is that I didn't want, what I hated about what I was doing, and parlaying that into like, okay, well, what can I do to make it not that way now? And just, you know, with the show, it was funny when I got started with the show, some people were like, oh, you know, you should have a business plan, Joe. And I'm like, a business plan? I was like, I'm just running the show. I was like, I'm going to write a book at some point, and I have all these other ideas and things. I was like, I don't really know, but I'm going to figure it out as I go. And that's just how it's always worked for me, to just look at it from every perspective and try to take the best information available to make a good decision.
So what's next?
For me, yeah. I'm actually starting an online school with a partner of mine, and I want to teach people how to build platforms like I've built. You know, not how to become a millionaire, but like, here's, you know, it starts out with platform building, and then going from there, it'll be small business training. You know, how to do better at inventory management was something huge that I had to battle people. I mean, battle like tooth and nail, like fight people, like almost come to this over inventory management.
Fisticuffs.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's like, well, cause they've worked here for 20 years. They know better than anybody. And it's like, well, the computer knows best. And we can make, you know, it's like, I always say, it's like, you can bend the rules, you can break the rules, but you have to have rules, right? You can make exceptions. You can do whatever it is that you want, but you at least have to start somewhere. And you start with having rules. And then you just work from that framework out. Because otherwise, it's just everyone just does whatever they want. And then you have like, you know, $800,000 of inventory sitting on the shelf. And it's like, well, so-and-so was supposed to come here yesterday. That was 6 months ago. And the only reason I know that is because the computer knows, and you obviously don't have a front, you know, time is something that people struggle with. No, you know, understanding how long ago something actually was.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a shame. It's hard to tell someone that.
Yeah, you're right. Humans are notoriously bad about assessing time and the things that go along with it. So that's so interesting. And I feel like I should be like, hey, Joe, thanks for coming on the Dreamers podcast or something like that.
Well, thank you, Scott. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. But that's so interesting to me. And I mean, obviously I'm biased. This is kind of like what I do, but I love hearing people's stories and how they've come about. And so I think it's easy for people, this is the conclusion I've drawn over the last 10 years. It's easy for people to come up with and point to, here's what I don't like. Like that part is easy. You know, whatever it is, we're really good at pointing out what's not working, what we don't like, what, you know, just as human nature, that type of thing. What I heard from you that you did in addition to that, you started asking yourself a couple of questions, how can I create something different that's not that situation, and what does that actually look like? And I think that's the really cool part that most people miss and they really, really struggle with. And I'm going to guess, you know, even though there's always more to the story, right? But I'm going to guess it wasn't as simple as just, oh yeah, here's exactly what that's going to look like for the next 10 years or anything like that. There was more to it, but you started with asking those types of questions and that type of process. And I think that's what's really cool. And that's what people can do to be able to make that overwhelming and intensive process a bit easier. Because the what you don't like is a great place to start.
Well, the what you don't like is usually probably about 60 to 80% of what you're doing. I mean, if that wasn't the case, you wouldn't be in the situation asking yourself, what is it, you know, where do I go from here? With that said, Scott, is there any last thoughts you'd like to share before we share how people can connect with you?
Yeah, you know, I would throw out a couple of different things. And, yeah, I really believe that the best way to accomplishing your dreams is to figure out, first of all, what they actually are, what they look like. And I know we talked a little bit about like visioning, and you know, if you would ask me 6 years ago, that would have sounded a little bit woo-woo to me. And I know we talked a little bit about the beginning part of the process of identifying what it is that you want, and you know, going through that, you know, I don't want and everything like that. But the more that you can get clear on what it is that you want, the closer and closer and closer it becomes to making that a reality. That's what I would push people to do, not just because that's part of what we do at Happen to Your Career, but that's what I've found again and again and again, you know, interacting with, I mean, even in HR, when I've gotten to interview thousands of people and ask them those types of questions and seeing the results for the people that are clear on what they want versus the people who aren't clear on what they want. Just seeing the results over years, periods of time, and connecting back up with those individuals, or, you know, if I hired them on or whatever else, it's amazing. The people that are clear on what they want get what they want, and the people who aren't clear on what they want don't get what they, well, they don't even know what they want, so they don't get it, right? Shock and surprise there. I mean, it's that type of logic. So that's what I would push you to do. It's something most people are never going to do. And I would push you not to be most people.
You know, it's funny, as we talk, I'm trying to think, there was something else after the sports world that I was thinking about going into. And I for the life of me, I can't remember what it was, because it was such a short period of time before I just wound up leaving what I was doing. And then it was like, okay, now what? Because, you know, the vision doesn't always come right away.
No,
you know?
It doesn't.
But it's funny that you mentioned all that, because I remember talking to my dad when I was growing up, and he talked a lot about, you know, visioning himself, where he wanted to be in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and so on. And, you know, it was something that's like, well, it's something I didn't quite understand growing up. And even something I guess up until even today, I still struggle with the idea of, like, cause I guess I'm not on a rail, right? He was on a rail. He was working for my grandfather and all that. So, they were just going to get bigger and bigger. And my dad was an awesome salesman and brought in tons of business. And it just, you know, the rail was laid out at that point. Whereas for me, it's like, I know where I'm heading next, but I don't know where I'm heading. You know, if you ask me 5 years from now, I have like hopes and dreams, but well, you know, I don't really know. I'm not totally clear on that yet.
So that's what's, I think, so interesting about this process. And that's what's so confusing to almost everybody about this type of process. And I was trying to pull it up as we were going here, because I get comments all the time. We've got this 8-day course that we actually just redid a very short period of time ago. And it helps people go through this process of figuring out what they want. And it's a case of, you know, you call it on a rail, and I might borrow that.
Yeah,
because
go ahead.
That helps people understand, I think, what it is that you're talking about. But when I talk about visioning, or I'm talking about figuring out what you want, it's not necessarily a job title. It's not necessarily a business, specific business idea. For some people it can be, but for most people it's not. Instead, what it is, it's figuring out the things that are more important than that and being open to how that they actually happen. And that's what I hear you describing, even if you know, that's not necessarily what you're calling it, but that's exactly what I hear you describing. You want very intensely this, as you called it, a lifestyle that allows some of that flexibility that you didn't have before. It allows a lot of, it allows you to interact with people that you want to interact with. I was trying to think some of the other things I heard you say, but you know, you've got these very, I would say, much more important things than really identifying what that job title is, or what that specific business idea is, and then focusing on those and then being open to how that happens. Because when you look at it from that standpoint, then you really engage something psychologists call selection bias. There's a couple of different other names for it too, but selection bias is the same thing that when you go and and you buy a new car or whatever, then all of a sudden you see, you know, red Honda Civics or, you know, silver Honda Civics everywhere, right? Your brain is now filtering in information that it thinks is relevant or thinks is important, and it's filtering out all the other stuff that it doesn't think is relevant, that, you know, we experience every day. So when you're clear on, this is the way that this stuff actually works, when you're clear on what it is that you enjoy, what it is that you want, and those more important things besides those, you know, job titles we're talking about, then it allows your brain to start to make connections in a way that it never actually has before, and start to see a pathway to be able to get there. But you have to be open to it. People who get dead set on, look, I'm going to be an architect at this point in time in my life, and I'm going to make this exact amount of money, and I'm going to, you know, do this other thing, they're probably going to get there. It's probably going to happen if they're that dead set on it, but it's probably not what is going to make them happy.
Two things. One, yeah. I was watching Tosh.0, and the kid, he was interviewing a kid on his show, and the kid, he's like in 10th grade or something. He's like, well, I wanted to be an architect, but I'm not really good at math. He's like, oh, okay. So then what are you thinking about being? I'm thinking architect manager. He's like, you can't just take you know, what you want to be and add the word manager to the end of it. He's like, you know, I'd like to be an astronaut manager. I get to fly up, get to see space, but I don't have to actually do anything. I can just get to go along for the ride.
That's hilarious.
And the other thing is, it's something else that came out that I didn't even mention earlier, was this, that the other part that all goes along with the school and platform building and the show and everything else is getting speaking engagements.
Oh.
So that's yeah. Actually, like, that's the, so between the school speaking engagements, the podcast, book writing, music, you know, DJing and music, like, you know what the goal is? I'll tell you what the goal is. And I was scared to death to tell anybody this for the longest time, and this is the truth. And after this we can start to wrap up, cuz I know we're running short on time. The
no
goal is to be Joe Pardo for a living. And when you can figure it out to the point where you're not embarrassed to tell somebody, like, oh, I want to be an architect manager, but I can't be an architect because I'm not good at math. When you can get to that point where you're able to admit, not just to yourself or to a few people, like, this is what the goal is, you know, you're really ready to start making that happen.
Love that. Absolutely love that. So you asked me what my dreams were a little bit earlier, and I think really, truly, to answer that even more clearly, And in a way that's unapologetically me, as what I'm taking you to say, really what I want to do is I want to help the not just the United States, but the world be able to do work in a completely different way, in a way that doesn't cause these massive sacrifices and massive toleration with what people have to be doing or should be doing or anything else along those lines, and instead allows companies to much more often take advantage of people's natural strengths and truly use resources in a way. And I'm not just talking about like money or anything like that or natural resources, but you know, even people in a way that leverages that versus acts as a barrier to that. Because there's a reason why, you know, 80%+ of people are not satisfied with their jobs, you know, based on the latest Gallup studies and blah, 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 whatever. And that's a big part of it. So we're doing that one person at a time. Happened to your career right now, but the goal is to be able to make a large enough impact where we can help organizations change the way that they're doing business around their people too.
Oh, that's awesome, man. You know what? I hope that even if you're able to only be successful to 1 or 2%, that's still an immense amount of people in the world.
That would still make a massive impact in. And I'm sure we could get some organizations to come along. If we've got 1 or 2% of any kind of population, then I think that would help tremendously getting the ball rolling.
I would agree. Scott, I would love it for you to share how people can connect with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So happentoyourcareer.com, HAPPEN, happen to your career, as opposed to letting your career happen to you, is our home base. You can find just about anything on there. You know, I'm on Twitter, on Facebook, LinkedIn, wherever friends are made, you can connect up with me there. And we've been talking about this whole process the entire time. I mentioned that 8-day course. Here's what we can do. We just redid it. So now we have a different version, and it helps people go from being in a place where they're overwhelmed, trying to figure out what it is that they want, and come out on the other side of it with a decision, what we call a next step decision. So we can actually set up a custom landing page where they can get a special version of the course for your audience. Why don't we do that at happentoyourcareer.com/dreamer? Is that okay?
Yeah, it sounds great.
Okay, let's do that. And then we'll get that set up, and then people can go there and be able to participate in the course, and at the same time get an idea of what it is that that we do. And I just got two or three emails. I just got an email from a woman named Marlene in Canada who said, "Hey, thank you so much. You know, appreciate all the support. You know, I just made my decision about what I'm going to do." She's been a teacher in Canada, and she's making a career transition. And I just got another one who is from Laura. And so this can help you if you're in that place where you're not exactly sure what the goal is, or you're not exactly sure what it is that you want to do, or you know, you're back trying to figure that out, like some of your stories, Joe. That's what we can help with. So connect with us there too. We'll get that
awesome.
Set up.
Yeah, I'll definitely have that in the show notes at howtodream.co.
Perfect.
I really appreciate that. And I really appreciate you coming on the show and having and having me on the show. And it's been a great experience. So I really appreciate that.
It's been fun. Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on.
You're very welcome. And I'd love to have you on again in a year to follow up and see how you've been going.
Sounds great.
Awesome. Thank you again, Scott.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dreamers Podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.
Hey Dreamers, Joe here. I really appreciate you listening to Dreamers Podcast. If you'd like to find out how to support the show, please visit howtodream.co/support for all the ways you can help out. Thanks for the support, and please keep on dreaming.